Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Yesterday marked a week since 10-year-old Ashley Johnson Barr went missing in Kotzebue, and the response is shifting from search and rescue to investigation. Alaska State Trooper spokesman Jonathan Taylor says some search efforts will continue along shoreline and other water access points, but the exhaustive nature of the multi-agency operation and length of time that's passed warrant transitioning the focus toward investigation.
There could be criminal activity involved in Ashley's disappearance. It could be just a tragic accident. Law enforcement is trying to pursue all of the leads.
Taylor says law enforcement, including the FBI, is not downsizing its presence in Kotzebue. About 3,000 people live in the remote northwest Alaska coastal city, and Taylor says investigators believe someone knows what happened and that a local call and text tip line has been set up. Taylor adds that forensics analysts in Anchorage are going through Johnson Barr's cell phone for any clues to what might have happened. The phone was found shortly after she went missing on a local street near a Kotzebue Park where she was last seen September 6th. Golden Valley Electric Association's Healy 2 power plant is online and commercially operational. The milestone follows 2 years of repairs and retrofits. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Golden Valley President and CEO Corey Borgeson said Thursday he expected Healy 2 to reach an important requirement overnight that'll qualify the coal-fired power plant to be declared commercially operational.
Milestone set by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska.
The RCA, which regulates the state's utilities, required Healy 2 to operate for at least 30 days at 85% or higher availability.
So we far exceeded that.
Golden Valley workers and contractors have been slowly stepping up operation of Healy 2 since July, after they'd completed $20 million worth of repairs and modifications to the system that feeds coal into the boiler. That's the system that malfunctioned and caused two explosions during test runs over the past couple of years. Borgeson says the problem appears to be fixed.
We feel fairly confident that we think we finally have it right.
He says the power plant and all its many subsystems also are running well.
It runs very smooth. If they want to set it at 45 megawatts, it goes to 45. If they move it up to 50, it just every minute goes up half a megawatt like clockwork.
Coal is the cheapest fuel available for generating electricity, so Borgeson says Healy 2 will enable Golden Valley to cut operating costs by reducing use of its diesel and oil-fired generators. He says ratepayers should see those cost savings reflected in their bills as of December 1st.
They might see a $5 to $10 change on their monthly bill.
The coal feeder system problems were the latest of many malfunctions at the power plant, which was completed in 1997 at a cost of $300 million in mainly federal and state funding. The plant began operation in 1998, but it failed to run dependably and economically, so it was mothballed in 2000. 13 years later, Golden Valley bought it for $44 million in a deal with the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. That's part of the $175 million total that Golden Valley has spent on upgrades at the plant, including systems to reduce emissions. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Two air quality ordinances were passed by the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly last night. They'll create a $500,000 testing program to measure the effectiveness of smoke scrubbing devices on home wood stoves. As KUAC's Robin reports, unless they're widely and properly used, the devices known as electrostatic precipitators probably won't be part of the borough's clean air compliance plan.
One ordinance established technical standards for emissions devices. A second paid for the testing program. A key intent of the program would be to allow wood burners to be exempt from burn ban days if they are properly using a retrofit control device. They are aftermarket technology that cleans particulates from wood or coal-fired stoves, such as an electrostatic precipitator, commonly called ESPs, or retrofit catalytic converters. Most types mount on the chimneys of wood or coal stoves and create a low-power electric field inside the stovepipe, charging the particles in the smoke. They are in wide use in Europe, but have just become available in the U.S. Dan Brown from the Environmental Protection Agency's Office of Air and Waste says EPA does not regulate emission devices for wood smoke.
It's coming from a foreign country. We're happy to work with the borough in looking at some of the testing protocols that would be needed to demonstrate the effectiveness of an ESP.
Dr. Jeannie Olson of North Pole has been running her own citizen testing program with an electrostatic precipitator device at her veterinary clinic.
I'm pretty sure I have more hands-on experience with these residential ESPs than anyone else in this room. I urge you to pass this ordinance. The community has been very supportive of this. Both Citizens for Clean Air and the Woodburners have joined in the support of this.
The borough will test some models this winter. Air quality manager Nick Czarnecki.
In order for an RCD to become an approved device, it must undergo laboratory testing and meet an emission threshold that is equivalent to an oil boiler.
Czarnecki says most wood stoves are 10 times as dirty as the average oil boiler. Smoke scrubber manufacturers claim they cut particulate emissions as much as 60%, but that is not enough. The testing program would not be cheap. Even with the competitive program set forth in the ordinance, it requires $458,000. Assemblymember Matt Cooper says appropriating the full amount makes sense.
Manufacturers who have devices they think are going to meet these standards are ranked higher if they're chipping in for the cost of the testing.
The funding ordinance passed unanimously. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Over 1,000 people are signed up to participate in tomorrow's 56th running of the Equinox Marathon in Fairbanks. The weather is forecast to be ideal, but as KUAC's Lex Trinan reports, organizers are coping with an unexpected problem.
Sinkholes are not normally something that race organizers deal with, but Stacy Fisk, the Equinox Marathon director, is unfazed by what she saw over the weekend.
It was 15 feet, you know, deep. You couldn't even see down there, and probably 2 to 3 feet wide, a little bit bigger. So yeah, it was taking up the whole section of the trail.
Fisk says she's confident that the historic course will be ready for Saturday's competition. The affected areas of the trail on the power line paralleling Gold Hill Road had been filled with sand, though there were reports of new ones opening up. Holes aside, temperatures are expected to top out around 60 degrees on race day with partly cloudy skies.
When the weather's good, you get a lot more people to sign up, and that's happening again this year.
Last year's individual champions Alan Spangler of Juneau and Christy Marvin of Palmer are planning to return to defend their titles.
I think it's going to be a tough race. I'm not expecting any kind of easy victory.
Though his training has been admittedly spotty after finishing second in a competitive field at the Crow Pass Crossing race near Girdwood this July, the defending champ Spangler says he is excited to compete with former University of Alaska Fairbanks classmates Kenneth Brewer and Cody Priest, who finished second and third last year. Spangler's time of 2 hours and 52 minutes is 11 minutes behind Stan Justice's 1984 record, which Spangler says he sees as a possible long shot for another year.
Not this year. Not a chance.
Marvin, who set the women's course record in 2014, won last year's race by 22 minutes, but says there could be unanticipated competition this year.
That could definitely give me a run for my money.
All Equinox races, including the marathon, the hiking division, and relays, begin at 8 a.m. Saturday at the UAF Paddy Center. In Fairbanks, I'm Lex Trinan.
And I'm Dan Bross.